Belinda Audio presents this unabridged recording of The Castlemaine Murders, written by Kerry Greenwood and read by Stephanie Daniel. Franny liked the ghost train, even though it was palpably fraudulent, being unsupplied with ghosts. In fact, any ghost who wanted a quiet place to rattle his chains in peace would have chosen an unadjacent area. Any real supernatural moaning would not have been heard over the shrieks, screams, growling noises and rattlings which emanated from behind the scenes, produced by enthusiastic Luna Park employees. Cobwebs made of cotton thread trailed pleasurably over the face. A ghost draped in a rotting shroud groped for them as the train clattered past. Phryne held on to her hat as a furry arm swiped for her head, and the werewolf's shriek of disappointed rage followed them down the dark passage. "All right, Lindia?" she asked the beautiful young man beside her. "I could do you a genuinely frightening ghost train, you know," he answered. He had been trained as a magician in China. "With mirrors and luminous paint and a few tricks, I could give you a journey into madness and nightmare." "I know you could," said Phryne affectionately. "But I've seen real nightmares, and I prefer horrors which are really, really unreal. Like that cowboy dummy. One could never imagine that he was a real corpse, could one?" The train stopped. The dummy hung from the low ceiling. Phryne reached up and grabbed the foot, trying to turn the papier-mâché mask towards her. The boot came off in her grasp. "Drat, I've broken it," she commented. Then she made a small noise like a kitten's mew. Only Lin Chung saw how she froze while examining the broken-off boot. All the colour leached out of her face, leaving her the colour of the moon. "What is it?" he asked with sudden concern. She showed him. Inside the dummy's boot were the leathery, ragged skin and the darkened bones of a real human foot.
Both girls were lean country kids, with messy, sun-kissed ponytails and grubby faces, now waiting nervously to see their mum race her horse across the line. Her youngest, Meg, had clung to her, whispering, "Mummy, don't go in the horsey race, please," her freckled nose scrunching up. She'd felt Meg's tears on her neck, prompting the sting of her own. Then, in the seconds before she hit the tree, she thought of her dad, Rod, and the pain it would cause him to lose her at just 26. She felt the weight of guilt in leaving him alone, now of all times, when a stroke of a pen in a faraway parliament could soon take their family mountain cattle runs away from him. Then she had a flash of her brother Sam, on the other side of the world in a Nashville recording studio. Or more likely in a bar, with a bourbon in his hand, wearing irresponsibility on his face along with his too cute grin. Finally, she saw Clancy. In the last split second of life as she had known it, Emily felt the horror of Clancy's rage towards her. As she hit the tree, she felt an overwhelming sense of regret that she'd mucked up her life so badly. She had allowed herself to be stolen away, from herself, from her family, and from her mountains. Then came the pain of impact. As snow gum gave way beneath her, Emily heard the sound of running water and wondered why that water was slowing to a trickle. She didn't realise it was the sound of the blood in her veins moving slower and slower. She listened to an axe falling somewhere in the distance, quickly at first, then slowing to a few lazy, haphazard strikes. She didn't know it was her heart, beating slower, then slower, then almost still. Just one lazy hack at a time.